Okay. Well, Pete, back to POAs, power of attorneys for property. At the break, I wanted to talk about how reaffirmation works, why we recommend it, why we're trying to do it in the office, and how, in your opinion, old should a POA be before you redo it again?
Well, in our practice, we just call it refreshing. So we just, unless they have changes, we just reprint it, put a different date on it, assuming there are no other changes in the law or in what they want to do and who they want to name. And so we do them every 2 years for those folks that are involved in our ongoing maintenance program. I have gotten a letter from a bank that said they would not honor a power of attorney over 6 months old, which is ridiculous. I have gotten a letter from a major national financial institution that said that they would not honor them over a year old. So it's going to depend a lot on the financial institution, the transfer agent, to whoever it is, that, or the bank that the people are dealing with, determine. But I think 1 to 2 years, I think 1 year is good. Something not more than a year old should be considered current and shouldn't present any problems. But it's up to the individual organization to make that determination.
No, I want to mention for people who are probably wondering, well, gee, why is that fair? They can't do this. They're not following my instructions. The fallback essentially is if the POA is denied, you have to go get a judge to tell the custodian to do what the document says, or the judge might come back and say, no, I'm not going to enforce this particular POA. So you find yourself back in court, yes, which is what you were trying to avoid in the first place with the POA.
Exactly.
So there is it's not that when they deny it, that's the final word. It just essentially puts you back into the place similar to if you didn't have a POA in the first place.
The practical effect of that is generally the people don't have the money to go to court and go through that process. So what they'll do typically is they'll just sort of put that particular asset aside and look for a source of funds from somewhere else where the POA is working, unless, of course, that is the only source of funds, in which case then they really have little choice.
Now, to help overcome all this, because this is an aspect of POAs most people don't understand, the custodian need not honor them. One of the things, and I shared this with you, and you said to me, Jim, there's a solution that might work. There's no guarantee it's going to work. It's called reaffirmation. And you suggested to start reaching out to all our clients and get them to understand we will offer this service to them. We don't charge for this. We offer it free of charge in our office to start taking new POAs, not to reaffirm a 10-year-old POA. Have the POA, quote-unquote, refreshed in the office of an attorney where they update it for any applicable law changes, re-sign it, re-witness, and notarize it. But beginning the following year with a new POA, you said, as a service to your clients, why don't you reaffirm the signature page? And I said to you, can you please put that in English, because I have no idea what you're talking about. And you said to me, you're going to stamp some verbiage on the signature page, have the notaries in your office notarize it when the client signs it, reaffirming that POA, and do that every year. Why don't you talk a little bit about what that strategy is?
Well, it's essentially re-signing the POA. So you try to, in some instances, duplicate the original language just immediately above the signature. In this case, because we're not doing a brand new document, you want to reaffirm all of the provisions in that POA and sign it anew with the same formalities that it was originally signed. So typically just a notary is all that's required on it to do that. So that is effectively refreshing, for lack of a better term, as though we reprinted the entire document and they signed it again.
And we are starting to do that this year. We created a stamp with the language you gave us, which was only one sentence. Do you remember the language of reaffirmation?
I don't remember specifically, but it would say that we reaffirm and republish this foregoing power of attorney, date it, sign it, and have it notarized.
Right, and you said to have it signed the exact same way that they originally signed it.
Exactly.
To reference the POA from its original inception date.
Mm-hmm.
And to just do that every year. And the theory being, you said, if the client now 8, 10, 12, 15 years after originally doing the document, the client now goes in. Well, the client is incapacitated. The agent now goes into the custodian and says, my husband, my wife, my friend, my child, whatever the case may be, is incapacitated. I am the agent named in the POA. Here is the POA. It was originally signed 12 years ago. My father, in the case, let's say it was a father and daughter, my father reaffirmed this POA every year for 15 years. You feel the custodian would be more inclined to honor that POA and not make the daughter go to court, as opposed to the daughter walking in with a 15-year-old POA and say, hey, my father named me 15 years ago. He's incapacitated. I need some money to help him.
Yeah, I do. It's been essentially re-signed every year going forward so that the custodian or the bank or whoever we're dealing with has the comfort of knowing that it's been, you know, redone every single year.
Perfect. So that's something, listeners, I want to encourage you to do. We in the office do that. If you're working with an advisor, ask if they can reaffirm it for you. There's no need to go to an attorney. I'm not trying to take money out of the arms of Pete here. But Pete, you explained it to me that the simple reaffirmation, not refreshing it, not writing it, not changing any of the provisions in it, just reaffirming it is something that doesn't necessarily need to be done with the help of an attorney.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
It should be done, people. Don't rely on doing a POA, putting it in the drawer, 8, 10, 12 years later, taking it out, blowing off the dust, going to your local bank and thinking they're going to honor it, because they're not. So let's talk about now POA for healthcare, and how does this differ, and what is this? Does this allow someone to sign it and then drag someone in and say, yeah, do this operation on them, I have their POA?
No, the medical power of attorney is effectively a springing power of attorney by definition, and that is each and every one of us, as long as we have capacity, have the ability to make our own medical decisions, and no one can take it from us except for a court, and the court would have to make a determination of incapacity before they would do that. So in this case, it takes a similar format where you have the principal, the person that is giving the authority to the agent to make medical decisions for them when they can't. Now, this is not a pull the plug. This takes makes all the medical decisions up to the point of pulling the plug. So we go from there. So
so it leads right into the living will.
Yes, it does, because that's really the next document. And there's not a lot of magic with the medical power of attorney in terms of...
But what kind of medical...
Is it something that you can restrict it to certain kinds of decisions? Or
right,
is it
that,
just...
That's what I'd be curious
about. I'm incapacitated, so now this person makes all the decisions.
Well, you know, can you say to him, yeah, while he's under, I always wanted that mole on his face cut off. So cut that mole off while he's under.
Well,
can you get to that level?
Probably not, at least in terms of the medical people. They're not going to honor something like that. But if it's a decision as to surgery, various procedures, what nursing home, whether you're long-term care, those type of decisions. And generally, the medical power of attorneys, at least the ones I've seen, are more of a carte blanche. In other words, I give full authority to my agent to make whatever medical decisions are necessary for my care. And so that's what I see most often. There's absolutely no reason you couldn't narrow it down, as Jim suggests, into something more restrictive if you had some concerns about what they might do, or you had some very strong beliefs about what you want to not have done. For example, I think as Jehovah's Witnesses don't want any blood transfusions. They have their own form, but it comes to the point where they can say, we don't want this procedure, and that certainly is permissible.
Hmm. Okay. And I was going to ask, and how does that lead into the living will?
Well, the living will is, I guess, the next document in time, because as a person's health deteriorates, do they want to be kept alive through mechanical support, through ventilators, that sort of thing, the pull-the-plug issue? And then finally, in conjunction with that, which is your Terry Schiavo situation out of Florida, do they want to be kept alive through tube feeding and hydration through an IV? The living will then will give either authority for someone to make that decision for you, which in my own personal opinion, having gone through that, is a terrible burden to place on someone, or as in Colorado, our standard form is a declaration where the person says, if this and this, that is, if two docs certify that I'm in this condition, I'm not coming back, I'm not going to recover from it, then I want the life-sustaining procedure withdrawn, which is literally pull the plug.
So let's talk about, back one step on the medical power of attorney. If there isn't that document in place, and let's say there are there's spouses that go in, and one spouse is going in for a procedure, and something goes wrong, and then some decisions need to be made about further procedures from that point. Aren't some of the documents that are signed during that kind of a form of a medical power of attorney? When you put down, in an emergency, contact my spouse who's sitting in the waiting room right here, and although we don't all read all the fine print in those documents, is part of that like a little mini giving them the power? Or at that point, if they don't have the medical power of attorney, are the doctors then going to be making the decisions and the spouse just sits by without power in making decisions?
Well, I think as a practical matter, at least the ones I've seen don't contain a power of attorney. What they do say, though, is if something goes wrong during the surgery, the doctors are then authorized to do whatever's necessary to save the person's life. And they will do that anyway. Mm-hmm. In my experience has been if the spouse is in there with them, they will consult with the spouse without a medical power of attorney, although one is technically required. The practical matter is that they're going to, at least in my experience, listen to the spouse and consult with the spouse in that situation.
Okay. But technically they don't. If there's a big difference in the wishes there, the doctor has every right, because there isn't a medical power of attorney granting that person the power, the doctor has every right to do what they think is best.
Well,
correct?
Only in not anything elective.
No.
If it's life-saving, they're going to do that probably anyway, but for a living will, which would say, I don't want any heroics, I don't want anything done to continue my life under certain circumstances.
Okay.
So,
interesting.
Yeah.
It is a whole subset that we've never discussed on this show before, and we want people to understand these five documents that, that's what I said, five documents.
5 minutes to go as well.
Oh, well, I said five documents, and he's holding up his hand with five. And I'm like, I just said five documents.
My signals have to do with time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What I'm getting at, Pete, is these are truly important documents that everybody should have.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't think of them. And what we were hoping to just accomplish today, listeners, is to get you thinking, get your juices flowing, to start putting these documents in place. Because really, what they're designed to do, if you look at them, now the will is a little different, but the power of attorney for property, the power of attorney for healthcare, the HIPAA documentation, the living will, it is to make it as if you weren't incapacitated, is make your wishes come true and not subject you to the whims and decisions of a judge or a court that doesn't know you, or to cause unnecessary and unneeded grievance and pain for your loved ones to have to decide, what would Peter want? What would Chris want? What would Jim want? Would he want us to do this or do that? And force people to make terrible decisions that they may question themselves on for the rest of their lives.
Well, and I know that my experience when my mother was approaching death, we were trying to figure out what was treatment and what was comfort care. So if she had a UTI, did I want to treat that? She certainly could die from that. Did I want her to die from that? Well, I don't want her to die at all. But nonetheless, that burden was placed on me to make those type of decisions, and it was very, very uncomfortable. Okay. And fortunately, I didn't have to make the ultimate decision, but certainly had to face that as a consideration.
So we're going to encourage everybody listening to make sure those documents are in place. You heard it from Pete. You could use the online services if you'd like. The biggest problems he saw with the online services aren't really the verbiage contained in the documents, is inappropriately filling them in. And that can be just as bad as not doing them at all. So my personal recommendation is you may want to consult with an attorney, but you need to do something, be it one of these online documents or an attorney. Put these in place.